Water, water everywhere, and all the boards did shrink. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. Of course, in Brooklynese, it's water, water. I didn't know how to say it. Water, water. Very awkward. But I hope you get the point. We will talk shortly about water and rain and our obsession, perhaps, fixation, perhaps, hang up with water, all of those. But first, let's take care of some business. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you from the OU Israel Center in Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. This show is for Shabbat Parshat Noach. And as I've alluded to already, we will focus, not exclusively, but heavily, on rainfall and water, and especially the significance that it has to the calendar dates and Parshat HaShavua, the weekly Torah portions, these last several weeks. As I've said often on this show, unfortunately far too often, when the topic of reciting Psalm 130 comes up, just open up a newspaper in the morning, Qassam rockets hit directly into this place, a soldier was killed in an ambush. Things still happen. We are not yet in the time of the future, the messianic time when other nations will recognize the one God of Israel and will recognize the special role of the Jewish people in the scope of things. And unfortunately, until then, we will still call out to God from the depths of our situation, of despair sometimes, and ask him to answer our prayers. Psalm 130. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmoria Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed, v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. All right, let's have another look at the water situation, and let's go back to the holiday of Sukkot. The Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah tells us, at four junctures the world is judged. And it mentions the grain production, that judgment is made at Pesach, and fruit of the trees on Shavuot. On what we call Rosh Hashanah, all human beings are judged, and on Chag, which is the name for Sukkot, we are judged for water. I would say that water primarily means rainfall, but not exclusively, because there are groundwaters and streams and the quality of water. A river that you could drink from versus a polluted river that you can't drink from or that people get sick from. This is all part of, I believe, the judgment for water. Water slash rain, quality, quantity, intensity will relate to some of those issues in the coming minutes. Perhaps as a consequence of the fact that the world is judged for water on Sukkot, we have certain practices in our time, and more in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, related to water specifically associated with Sukkot. For example, the mitzvah of Nisuch HaMayim, water of libation. Every day in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, there was libation of wine. On the 7 days of Sukkot, in addition to the wine, there was also water. The drawing of the water for the purpose of the libation mitzvah of Nisuch HaMayim, the drawing of the water was accompanied by great festivities and became known as Simchat Beit HaShoeva, literally the joy of the place of the drawing of the water. And to this day, the remnant of that, until we have a Beit HaMikdash, are the celebrations of Sukkot, which are named Simchat Beit HaShoeva, even though they are currently not associated with the drawing of water. But that's getting a little bit off the point. The point is that we have a mitzvah in the Torah that takes water and uses it for the fulfillment of this mitzvah in the temple. And it is not a coincidence that this is the time that we are being judged for water. I should add now, I really should add it later, but I might forget. I should add now that the use of water for mitzvot is not just a once a year kind of thing, but if you wanted to focus on water even more, you can point out the ritual washing every morning, and the ritual washing before eating bread for a meal, and the Mayim Acharonim, which is the token washing at the end of a meal before Birkat HaMazon, and then there's the water of the mikvah, of course. But I digress. Back to the focus of Sukkot, Nisuch HaMayim Simchat Beit HaShoeva. I spoke about it in weeks past. You have the aspect of water related to the four species, etrog, the palm, lulav, hadassim, the myrtle, and the aravot, the willow, known as arve nochal, the willow of the river, and there's a lot of water tied in with that, and with Hoshanot, and on Hoshana Rabbah. There's a little difficulty with water on Sukkot, because at the same time that we are hoping and praying for a good judgment so that we will receive beneficial rain during the rainy season and not have any water problems during the year, we also do not want it to rain right away, because during Sukkot we have an outdoor mitzvah, so to speak, that depends upon decent weather. And rain takes away the opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah. So that's a conflict which I discussed in the past, and it really has no place for this particular show, but just put it into the pot. And then came Shmini Atzeret, when we had Tfilat Geshem, the prayer for rain, inaugurating the period of the year, almost a half of a year, when we say, Mashiv HaRuach HaMorid HaGashem, acknowledging God as the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall. That sentence is added 3 times a day, 4 times on Shabbat and holidays, into the portion of the prayer known as the Amidah. In the meantime, we read Parshat Bereshit, the beginning of the Torah, last week, which of course tells us of the creation of the waters, the separation of the upper waters and the lower waters. There's even an earlier reference, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was chaotic, tohu vavohu, darkness on the depths, veruach Elokim, and the Spirit of God, merachefet, hovered over the waters. So water, 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 very strong emphasis this time of the year. Which brings us to this week's Torah portion of Noach, and with the main theme at the beginning of the flood, obviously water is a major kind of issue. It is ironic that we have a mix of praying for beneficial rain with the Torah portion that discusses rain that was anything but beneficial for the world. Open a newspaper, turn on the radio, TV, and everyone has been made acutely aware of the devastation from hurricanes, Katrina and Wilma, the most known, by name, but there's damage potential from every hurricane and flooding that results following an earthquake. And we have, let's say in this world, more than our share of bad experiences with water. I guess what can be said is that in addition to praying for rain where there is no rain, we pray for good rain where there is bad rain. Or, as the title of this issue of Torah Tidbits indicates, there is situations of no rain, of bad rain, and of good rain. But the good rain is as opposed to no rain, and as opposed to bad rain. There's a Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit, from which the famous story of Choni HaMa'agel, Choni the circle drawer, comes. The Mishnah tells us that there was a serious drought in the land of Israel, and the people of the time turned to one very, very righteous individual who was known to have a very personal and special relationship with God, and asked him to pray on behalf of the people for rain. So he did, and it did not rain. And Choni was a little frustrated by that, we can say. He said to God, "Your children turned to me to petition you for rainfall. I want it to rain." The Mishnah says he drew a circle on the ground, stepped in it, and said to God that he was not leaving the circle until it would rain. Ostensibly, because of the special relationship between Choni and God, it started to rain, a few drops. Instead of saying, "Well, I've done the best I could," Choni says to God, "That's not what I had in mind. I want heavy rain." And it started coming down in such force that it was more destructive than anything. Choni says, "God, that's not what I had in mind. I am asking for beneficial rain that will fill the reservoirs, the cisterns, and benefit the people." And so it rained, and Choni left the circle, and everybody was happy. And it kept on raining and raining and raining, says the Mishnah. And then the joy of the rain turned a little because there was flooding, and then serious flooding. And this beautiful rain that ended the drought and served its purpose kept on coming over and over, more and more and more. And then the people came to Choni and they said to him, "As you have prayed that it should rain, we beseech you to pray that it should stop raining." Choni's answer was, "I have my limits, and that's something I won't ask for." The story from that Mishnah is good because we see the danger and the harm of no rain. We see the danger and the harm of too much rain, too fast, too hard, and we see the blessing of good rain. Let us digress for a moment with a musical selection. And I wouldn't say it's directly connected to what we're talking about, but it does explore a whole other angle which belongs as part of a discussion about water. In addition to water being literal, which is what we've been talking about, rainfall, actual rain, H2O, that comes from the clouds, we also have in Jewish thought and Jewish life the analogy of water to Torah, the analogy of water to life itself, and the analogy of water to God in a certain way. In Tehillim Mem Bet, chapter 42 in Tehillim, we find the psukim ke'ayal ta'arog alafike mayim, like an ibex who desires the streams of water so he could drink. Kein nafshi ta'arog elecha Elokim. So too does my soul desire the relationship with you, God. The next pasuk continues with the same analogy. Tzam'a nafshi, My soul thirsts. Thirsts for water. Thirsts for life. Thirsts for knowledge. Thirsts for Torah. Thirsts for God. Tzama nafshi l'elokim l'kel chai. Matai avo v'ereh p'nei Elokim. When will I be privileged to come to the Beit HaMikdash and to have this face-to-face experience with God? On the one hand, we're off the topic of actual rain and water. On the other hand, it's all part of the same picture. Ka'ayal ta'arog. Let's get back on the track for the real water issue. This coming Tuesday night, November 8th, which happens to be an irrelevant date, it is the eve of the 7th of Cheshvan, and that is relevant because that is when Jews in Eretz Yisrael begin to ask God for rain. The Mishnah in the beginning of Ta'anit tells us when we start mentioning God as the rainmaker, that was Shmini Atzeret / Simchat Torah, and for a 15-day period after Simchat Torah, we hold back asking for rain. The Mishnah says it was a courtesy to those fellow Jews who had come to Yerushalayim to celebrate the holiday and were taking their time and getting back to the most remote parts of the diaspora of the time, till Nahar Prat, as the Mishnah says, and then on the 7th of Cheshvan we start asking for rain by inserting into the weekday Amidah the words V'tein Tal Umatar Livracha, let it rain, please God. Not just rain, beneficial rain, Livracha, for a blessing. because the Mishnah adds that one does not ask for rain until it is close to the rainy season when he needs rain, the Jews in Bavel, Babylonian exile, did not start asking for rain at the 7th of Cheshvan, but they did it 2 months, 60 days after the autumnal equinox. Not going to go into the whole thing now, but because of the switch from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, the date of beginning the petition for rainfall from Bavel and from all diaspora communities is the 5th or 6th of December. That's a whole chapter by itself, but we're not going to do that now. However, let me make it clear so that nobody makes a mistake. When I say we begin the prayer for rain, asking for rain, with the words V'tein talum atah livracha, I am referring to the Jews of Israel. The Jews elsewhere do not ask for rain in their Amidah until the 5th of December. Any of the halachic details that I will present for our Talum Atar applies at its time to the one that is said in Chutz La'aretz as well. Now, there are all kind of issues like visitors to Israel at this time of the year, short-term stay, long-term stay, etc. There is also a very interesting issue, which maybe I will get to, of the Jews in the Southern Hemisphere, where their seasons are opposite ours, and what do they do about the petition for rain when we ask for it, when they want it to fall. All of these things are the details. Bigadol, in broad terms, we are talking about a serious issue. The Masechet Ta'anit, a whole volume of Mishnah and Gemara that deals with fasting, is specifically discussing the issue of drought, which prompts the local rabbinates and courts to declare fast days. Not that there aren't other situations where we have fasting, but the major calamity in ancient Israel, and to a different extent today as well, is a situation, God forbid, of drought. We've been talking about rain and water, literal, figurative, and its significance. It's sort of been a hodgepodge, which I don't really feel bad about in the context of a radio show, because you're listening, you'll get something out of it. If I were writing this down, which I have, then it would have to be a little bit more coherent. Be that as it may, I started the show with a quote, if this would have been a live broadcast with the ability to have people phone in, I would have turned it into a quiz. I can't do that now. But the words, water, water everywhere, are from the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, a poem from the end of the 18th century by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, a British poet, an English poet, I should say. I would say that just about everybody knows the phrase water, water everywhere, and I saw it referred to on one of the websites as a very often misquoted quote, and I'm guilty of that too. I used to think it was water, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. The actual quote is water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. Test that on your literary friends and see if they know it. The poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, is a poem about an old sailor who is compelled to tell strangers about the supernatural adventures that befell him at sea after he killed an, another question to test people, commonly known, I would say, an albatross, a friendly seabird. The expression an albatross around one's neck comes from this poem, I would think. It's a long poem that I studied in school and don't remember too much about, but I'm looking at another quote from there. I will read it, but without the TH endings. I won't say he prayeth, but he prays. And even though the words have a slight Christian kind of flavor, it is definitely something that can be said from a Jewish perspective too. And without knowing its exact context, I really can't say for sure if this applies in the way that I would like it to apply, but it was interesting to find this quote because we're talking not just about rain and water, but about praying for rain and water. He prays best who loves best, all things, both great and small. For the dear God who loves us, He made and loves all. Now there's something to rain, especially, that should take a person out of his individual focus into a broader communal and world view. Let's go back to Shmini Atzeret for a moment. On that day, at Shacharit, we still said Morid Hatal, or nothing, in that slot, and it was only at Musaf that we began to say Mashiv HaRuach Morid HaGashem. A person who is homebound on that day, for whatever reason can't go to shul and wants to pray, is supposed to time his prayer so that Shacharit will definitely be before his shul would reach Tfilat Geshem, and Musaf definitely after that time when they daven Musaf. In other words, if a person has to stay home on a Shabbat morning, regular Shabbat morning, and he wakes up very early, 6 o'clock in the morning, and the sun is just rising, he can daven the whole davening. And he doesn't have to coordinate it with his Beit Knesset, with his shul, with his synagogue. But when we switch from summertime to wintertime in a halachic context, when the rainy season is inaugurated with Tfilat Geshem and culminated with Tfilat Tal, on those days, it would be wrong for a person to pull himself away from the community, make his davening less than perfect, less than ideal. What I mean by that is as follows. Let's say a person is homesick on Shmini Atzeret. He gets up very early in the morning, but he tires easily and he's going to go to sleep soon. He can't wait. He wants to be able to daven in this window of opportunity. Shacharit, not a problem, because his community is still davening Shacharit with Morid Hatal. Musaf, even though had he been in shul, when they get up to it, they will have already said Tfilat Geshem, or at least the Gabbai would have announced Mashiv HaRuach Morid HaGashem. In this fellow's situation, he's going to have to say Morid Hatal, even in Musaf of Shmini Atzeret, which is not the official thing to do, but because his community has not yet said Geshem, he can't say Geshem. Less than ideal. Similarly, if he wakes up late and he's davening Shacharit after his shul has already said Geshem, he says Mashiv HaRuach HaMorid HaGeshem in Shacharit, which is not the way it's supposed to be. But he has no choice because he does not rule the situation, the community does. This is what I mean as a little halachic illustration of the fact that when it comes to rainfall, we are not talking as individuals, we are talking as members of a community, and that community aspect shows itself in many different ways. Even if you just open up Parshat Noach and you see that Noach isolated himself with his wife, three sons and their wives, and a sample of the animals of the world, and everybody else was killed off by a devastating flood. In other words, it's situations like this which emphasize the point we're all in this together. Here's another halachic detail. An individual starting from, in Israel, the 7th of Cheshvan, who's supposed to say V'tein Talu Matali V'racha, who doesn't say it, has invalidated his Amidah and he must repeat the whole thing. You might say, well, wait a minute, why go so tough? I mean, there are other additions to the davening, which if you make a mistake, you don't have to repeat. If on Chanukah one doesn't say Al Hanisim, or a fast day one doesn't say Aneinu by mistake, you leave it alone. Here, we say, you did not say these two little words, Tal Umatar. Your entire Amidah, 19 brachot, are wasted and you have to stand another Amidah from beginning to end in order to say V'tein Talamata Levracha in its context. You cannot say V'tein Talamata Levracha on its own. It has to be in its proper context, even though it means Bracha Levatola, a wasted davening. And if you did it at Shacharit and you don't remember till the afternoon that you forgot for sure, you have to treat it as if you didn't daven Shacharit and do a makeup at Mincha, which is a whole other topic. Now one can argue, look what I said. I said V'tein Bracha, give a blessing. That's not a bad thing. All right, I left out give rain and dew as a blessing. But it can't be that bad not to say those two words and still invoke a blessing from God. The answer is halacha establishes the fact, and the fact of the matter is it is considered devastating that you, one single individual, did not properly ask God for rain during the rainy season. Your Amidah is invalidated. It doesn't matter how many other people have said it properly, where you can say, well, we, the Jewish people, asked for rain. We don't know the efficacy of each prayer. We don't know the power of an individual's prayer. A sad point is that the majority of the Jews in the world do not pray. And we don't know how many drops of rain, so to speak, if you want to make it simplistic, each person's prayer will bring to this world and to the Jewish community and to the benefit of the individual. Rain is all of that. For those regular listeners to my show or readers of Torah Tidbits, you know that one of my styles is to take halachic detail, especially picky little detail, obscure detail, maybe trivia detail, and show at least a fascination in it and what stands behind it. Now let's take this to one step further. Jews in the Southern Hemisphere, what do? Their seasons are opposite ours. So here we are at the beginning of our rainy season, ready to ask God for rainfall. This is exactly the season that certain communities in the Southern Hemisphere do not want it to rain. Rain can be harmful. Rain can breed disease. Rain can damage crops. And the people in these communities don't want it to rain. Of course, they want beneficial rain where it belongs, Eretz Yisrael and other Northern Hemisphere communities, but they don't want it for themselves. Comes the halacha and says, tell you what we're going to do. You have halachic permission not to ask for rain. You still have to say that God is the Mashiv HaRuach HaMorid HaGashem. That is a fact. But when it comes to the Barech Aleinu Bracha, you are allowed not to say V'tein Talumata Livracha. You go to the fallback general statement, V'tein Bracha, give a blessing. And you don't have to ask God for that, which would be working against your best interest. I might add here that we're talking not about all communities in the Southern Hemisphere, because only those where rain would be harmful to them have permission to drop the V'tein Talumata Livracha. In communities which exist in the Northern Hemisphere as well, where it rains all year round and it's not seasonal, there is no personal harm to hesitate in saying V'tein Talumata Levracha according to the halachic schedule of the world, which is to begin on not the 7th of Cheshvan, but on December 5th, as I mentioned earlier. But a community where rain is harmful to them has permission to skip it. Now you'll ask, what about their rainy season where they want it to rain, and we have already finished with the rainy season and we don't ask for it anymore? In other words, Pesach time. Our Pesach time is when we stop asking Talumatar Livracha. That's the time where the Southern Hemisphere communities would love to be able to ask for it. They cannot. Not in Barech Aleinu. That far, the halacha does not allow them to go. In other words, all year round, these communities, if they exist, would say V'tein Bracha. Then there's even a little further diuk, little fine-tuning. Some say that a community in the Southern Hemisphere, for whom rain is harmful during their dry season, our rainy season, does not ask for Talmud Mutar, but during their rainy season does not ask either. They are allowed to ask and say V'tein Talmud Mutar L'Vracha, but only in the bracha of Shema Kolenu, which is the final bracha of request in the daily Amidah, the weekday Amidah. It is the catch-all place for prayer, and these opinions say, do it there, not in the formal place, because that's a matter of the seasons as fixed for Eretz Yisrael and other, let's say, Northern Hemisphere communities, but in the more personalized place for prayer, you can say V'tein Talmud Mutar L'Vracha when you need rain. Others say, even there you can't, except in times of drought. And then you don't use the words V'tein Talmud Mutar L'Vracha, you use the special prayer for Atzirat Geshamim, for situations of drought, which is inserted into Shema Kolenu, and that's the way it works. So, when I say this to people, someone invariably will ask, well, I thought we daven for the people of Israel. And the answer is yes and no. You daven for the people of Israel, you daven for Eretz Yisrael, but you also pray for yourself. And it's as if Halacha says we're not going to expect people to be able to pay lip service to asking God for rain when in their hearts they're hoping it won't rain. And you don't really pray in such a way to say, please God, let there be rain over the lakes and reservoirs in Israel, but not over my wheat field, which would suffer damages if it rains there. It doesn't work like that. V'tein Talmud Mutar L'Vracha means something, and it's not a game. It's a serious thing, because prayer is serious, because rainfall is serious. Let me throw one other factor into the pot. This week's Torah reading of Noach tells us that on the 17th day of the second month, one opinion in the Gemara is that that is the month of Cheshvan, even though when we count months later, we consider Iyar to be the second month. Cheshvan is possible, according to this opinion in the Gemara, that before our experience in Egypt and the command of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, this month of Nisan is your first month, that before that time we go by counting from creation, and the second month is Cheshvan. On the 17th of Cheshvan, the Torah tells us, the flood began. Harmful, bad rain. The Mishnah tells us that if, after mentioning God as the rainmaker from Shmini Atzeret, and asking God for rain from in Eretz Yisrael, the 7th of Cheshvan, if it happens that by the 17th of Cheshvan it has not yet started to rain, then individuals, not the community yet, but individuals accept it upon themselves to fast three fast days, a Monday, Thursday, Monday, which they will use to petition with more serious prayer God so that it should rain. Ironic, is it not, that the 17th of Cheshvan is associated with the beginnings of possible drought that prompt fasting to ask for rain, and the 17th of Cheshvan is the date that the most devastating rain in the history of the world commenced. It certainly makes you think, don't you think? I found the song I was looking for earlier. It's another Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael, which we say after Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. But let's now put it into a context so that it will be appropriate to play it here. When we are talking, when I'm talking now about good rain, bad rain, no rain, I can't help think of the devastation from Hurricane Katrina earlier, and more recently from Wilma, the devastation of the earthquakes in various parts of Asia, and the tsunami, water again, and the flooding that follows an earthquake, water again, and say that we need to seriously petition God for beneficial rainfall for the whole world, and for relief for those who are suffering and continue to suffer because of the devastation caused by various, quote, acts of nature, acts of God. Even though the Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael speaks about our fellow Jews in the spirit of Parshat Noach, where I think that we are duty-bound to focus on our membership in the human race, a realization that our Judaism definitely makes us different and holds us apart from the rest of the world, but our humanity connects us to the rest of the world as well. We should never get to the point where it's Jews to the exclusion of everybody else. I don't think it's bad to give ourselves a priority, but I think it's also important to remember that we are part of the family of man and woman, and that it's Parshiot Bereshit and Noach that should give us that reminder. Avraham Avinu shows up at the very, very end of Parshat Noach. For the rest of Noach, we're all in this together. And this is not just a look back at our early origins. This is a look to the future in messianic times where the nations of the world will recognize the oneness of the God of Israel and the uniqueness of the Jewish people. This does not mean that everybody will become Jewish. In fact, today you have that phenomenon where individuals are recognizing the specialness of the Jewish nation, and they say, I don't feel worthy of, or I am not ready to, or I don't want to become a Jew. I want to become a righteous Ben Noach. But we'll talk about that some other time as well. What I wanted put into this context is, even though the words are going to be Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael, our brothers, the whole house of Israel, for this I want you to hear from the song, fellow human beings, wherever they are in trouble, we ask God to help and alleviate the situation and the suffering, because that will hopefully lead to the ideal that I described before. I also want to emphasize that I am not proposing that all the differences be dissolved and there be one humanity. I believe very much that this world needs regular people, and among those regular people is a subset of regular people who have, from long-time tradition, accepted the challenge of rising to a spiritual height greater than is required of a human being, but what is required of the Jewish people, of a Jew. Do I believe the Jewish people are special? Yes, I do. Do I believe that non-Jews are not special? No, I don't. I believe they're special too, and that individuals can rise above the standards of human beings. I am not concerned, I don't want to say it like that, we are not concerned that human beings other than Jews rise to a spiritual level above that which is expected and required of human beings. Halavai, that human beings should behave like human beings. The Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws, are no insignificant body of laws. It is not seven things. It is dozens and dozens of requirements, and the moral standards of a person, of a society, that would keep strictly to the seven Noahide laws and everything else that goes along would be a high-quality society. We consider non-Jews who keep the seven Noahide laws to be righteous among the Gentiles of the world and have a share in the world to come and everything that that means. So just because a non-Jew doesn't keep Shabbos, we don't fault him for it. In fact, we appreciate the fact that he doesn't keep Shabbat. We will criticize him if he does keep Shabbat, because Shabbat is not for him. But if he cuts corners in the areas of stealing or any of the laws that his society creates for the maintenance of society, then he is not living up to his basic standard of humanity. And I might add that Jewish people have to live up to a basic standard of humanity in addition to going far and beyond that. It's not enough to take one and leave the other. I'm trying very hard to say something which I believe is important without the potential of putting my foot in my mouth. I don't think I've said anything like that. I'll have to see what feedback there is from this show. Since that was sort of an invitation for reader feedback, I will tell you that I could be reached at TT for Torah Tidbits at OU.org. A song, I really, really can't even tell you exactly what the song is. I've got a little problem on my computer. There are a lot of untitled play sets, and I really should keep better after it. It reminds me of an old cartoon, which is one of my favorites. A picture of wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling filing cabinets. Hundreds of them. In the extreme upper left-hand corner of the room is a file drawer that says A to Z. All the rest are labeled miscellaneous. With that introduction, enjoy this song. I've made out the words Yachad B'Yachad and Lo Yisa Goy El Goy Cherev and a few other words. I'm sure some of you can do better than that. If anyone happens to know the name of the song and even the album that it comes from, I would appreciate hearing from that person. You can reach me by email, as I said before, at tt@ou.org. You will not find too many email addresses with fewer characters. tt@ou.org. Thank you very much.
Bye. אשא את תפילתי לך, פקיד את נשמתי, ענה כלי יהיה עימי ויצל אותי. לך אשיר את תודתי על החיים ועל ביתי, ענה כלי שמתחינתי ושמור על משפחתי. אמור לשמש אל תזרח תאיר עינינו ונשמח את דימותינו ענקה. יחד ביחד עינינו למזרח נישא, וכשיבוא נשמח בלי פחד. יחד ביחד אם פעם הגאולה יד ביד ניצד, כן יחד ביחד לא יסתל בו ילד וחרב, כך יפתפתנו בחורב. יחד ביחד השלום עד לא רחוק, הנה הוא כבר קרב. לך אשא את תפילתי לך, פקיד את נשמתי, ענה כלי יהיה עימי ויצל אותי. לך אשיר את תודתי על החיים ועל ביתי, ענה כלי שמתחינתי ושמור על משפחתי. אמור לשמש אל תזרח תאיר עינינו ונשמח את דימותינו ענה כך. יחד ביחד עינינו למזרח נישא, וכשיבוא נשמח בלי פחד. יחד ביחד אם פעם הגאולה יד ביד ניצד, כן יחד ביחד לא יסתל גוי אל גוי חרב, כך יפתחתנו בחורף. יחד ביחד השלום עוד לא אחר, כי הנה הוא כבר בדד אני נמצא, לעולם לא ירער, רק לך תמיד אקרא שאותי תשמע. וכשהדרך ארוכה ולא רואי בית קיצה, כפיים בביטחה אותי תישא. אמור לשמש אל תזרח תאיר עינינו ונשמח את דימותינו ענה כך. יחד ביחד עינינו למזרח נישא, וכשיבוא נשמח בלי פחד. יחד ביחד אם פעם הגאולה יד ביד ניצד, כן יחד ביחד לא יסתל גוי אל גוי חרב, כך יפתחתנו בחורף. יחד ביחד השלום עוד לא רחוק, הנה הוא כבר יחד ביחד אם פעם הגאולה יד ביד ניצד, כן יחד ביחד לא יסתל גוי אל גוי חרב, כך יפתחתנו בחורף. יחד ביחד השלום עוד לא רחוק, הנה הוא כבר קרב. יחד ביחד עינינו למזרח נישא, וכשיבוא נשמח בלי פחד. יחד ביחד אם פעם הגאולה יד ביד ניצד, כן יחד ביחד לא יסתל גוי אל גוי חרב, כך יפתחתנו בחורב. יחד ביחד השלום עד לא רחוק, הנה הוא כבר קרב.
That's pretty much it for the show. Let me sum up and finish off with a couple of odds and ends. Kiddush Levana for this month of Cheshvan. First opportunity is Motzoi Shabbat Parshat Noach. This according to the opinion that one may say Kiddush Levana 3 days after the Molad. This is known as Minhag Yerushalayim, known as the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. There are many people who insist on waiting 7 full days from the Molad. The two things mitigating in favor of going with the 3-day opinion, but check with your own Rav to make sure you could say it that early. One is the fact that it's Motzoi Shabbat, and one is the fact that it is in the winter time, meaning in the rainy season, where nights are more likely to be cloudy than during the summertime. And therefore, many people who hold during the summer the 7-day rule we'll ease it up during the winter time and say Kiddush Levana if an opportunity presents itself before 7 days, especially if it is Motzoi Shabbat, the preferred time for Kiddush Levana. I want to present an idea for people who don't live in Israel, at least to be aware of the fact that we start asking for rain on the 7th of Cheshvan. It has practical relevance for people who are visiting here, and there are many, many different opinions. The general rule of thumb is that a person who visits Israel with intention of staying for less than a year says Talu Matar according to his own hometown schedule, which means if he's from Chutz La'aretz, he doesn't say it until December 5th. However, there's another opinion that a person who is here when we begin saying V'tein Talu Matar Livracha begins to say it like we do and then continues even when he goes back. Others, especially if you're here for a longer period of time, are told by their Rabbanim to say V'tein Bracha in Borech Aleinu and then to switch, then to add V'tein Talu Matar Livracha to the end of Shema Koleinu. Sort of like dancing at two weddings, or bridging two doorposts, or whatever. Straddling the fence, more like it. Now, a person, let's say, is following the opinion that even though he's visiting Israel now, since he's going to return in a week and or 2 weeks or whatever, not a whole year, he says, like Chutz La'aretz, which means he does not begin Talu Matar when we do. But let's say he made a mistake, because he heard the Gabbai bang his hand down on the table and announce V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, and he said it. And then he's talking to somebody the next day, or later that day, and the guy says, no, you weren't supposed to say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, you were supposed to continue V'tein Bracha. In that case, having honestly, inadvertently begun to say Talu Matar, you continue, according to many poskim, even when you go back to the States, because to stop it is not nice. So as I said, there are very many different opinions, and it behooves us to ask our own posek, what should I do? One thing that is also clear is that if anyone is a baal tefillah, a chazan, in the other place, for example, if I were to visit the States after next week, and I were to go to the Amud, first, according to some, I should refuse the Amud, because that would necessitate my saying V'tein Bracha out loud. You can't get away in an American setting before December 5th with saying V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. They would jump down your throat and correct you, and they would be right. But it's not ideal for a person from Eretz Yisrael to say V'tein Bracha after the 7th of Cheshvan, and therefore one should not go to the Amud. If one is a Chiyuv and has no choice but to go, then he has to do like the locals. So this is a nice example of a whole broader topic on Minhag from where you came, and the Minhag to where you are going, and what's private and what's public. Let's leave it as an open issue. Another topic that we're presented with from Parshat Noach are the 70 nations that descended from Noach in the years after the flood. And the only comment I will share with you on that is notice, it's an observation, notice the number. 70 nations correspond to the 70 souls, the individuals of Yaakov's family, who went down to Egypt and basically became the forerunners of the nation of Israel. So the nations of the world have their origins with a 70, and the nation of Israel has its origin as a 70. Corresponding to the 70 nations, of course, we have the 70 parim of the Sukkot Musaf sacrifices, but again, that's another issue for another time. Getting back to the water and rain issue, I just wanted to share a comment that Rabbi Nachman Kahana told me yesterday. Very nice idea. There's a statement that the day of rain is as monumental as Tchiyat HaMetim, the revival of the dead. So he said, what, Ad Kedei Kach? You're talking about rain, and you're comparing it with the resurrection of the dead? He says there's an interesting similarity. Rain is produced when you take a sea, an ocean, the water evaporates, leaving behind the chemicals and salts that render the water undrinkable, unfit for our use. That's not really fair, because you could do plenty of use in the ocean, but let's say undrinkable, evaporates the water, forms a cloud, rains down, and that water comes down pure. Similarly, there's the process of the soul leaving the body, which represents the impurities attached to the soul during a person's lifetime. The soul goes to Olam Haba, whatever that means, and returns to a pure soul existence, spiritual existence, and in Tchiyat HaMetim, in the revival of the dead, returns in a purer form. Hence the analogy between rain and Tchiyat HaMetim. I think we'll call it a show at that, with just my wishes that you have a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, and Lehishtameach.